Welcome to the Connect the Dots podcast with Jeffrey Klein, part of the Shareable Podcast Network, and sponsored by AIQ, a snackable newsletter of AI news for busy professionals. Jeffrey engages in conversations with a diverse group of successful people, exploring their stories and the dots they connect along the way. The hope is to inspire your journey and find ways for you to connect your own dots. Here's your host, Jeffrey.
My guest today is Alex Brunori, a globally awarded chief creative officer who has worked as an executive creative director for international network agencies like JWT, McCann, and Publicis. A digital pioneer and early tech adopter, Alex led Google's creative team in Dubai for the Middle East, Africa, and Turkey. As a marketing innovator in his current role as VP of Brand and Brand Experience at G42, Alex is reshaping how one of the world's most prominent AI groups shows up to the world and communicates. He is a TEDx speaker whose keynotes continue to inspire audiences across industries and geographies. He is also a rock, classic, and contemporary singer and composer, a modular synthesis inventor, a Kundalini yoga meditation and lucid dreamer teacher, and a generative AI expert and artist redefining the ethos and aesthetics at the crossroads of tech, AI, and creativity. Welcome, Alex.
Hey, Geoffrey. Great being with you. Thanks for having me.
You have quite an incredible background, a mixed variety of things, but I like to start at the beginning. So where were you born and what did your parents do for a living?
Oh, I was born in Rome, in Italy, from a middle-class family. My mother was a mother, very common thing in Italy back then. And my father was a salesman. But interestingly, before being a salesman, he was a soccer player. He was a very young, promising Lazio soccer player. And then his dad, my grandpa, died for a heart attack. And it faced the dilemma of not being able to keep doing sport, because back then you wouldn't earn from sport. It was really a passion thing more than an earning thing. And so he had to quit both his football practice and his law degree and start doing the salesman, which was his father's work, in order to sustain the family. And he managed to do this beautifully, to the point that his younger brother, Maurizio, was able to go to university and become the youngest Italian professor in biochemistry, and later an internationally awarded researcher working on prions and other defining discoveries about how our brain works. So you could say it did a huge sacrifice in terms of personal interest for the sake of the family, and managed to raise us without nothing that we were missing. But I always keep in mind that he had to quit his dreams to do so.
Wow. That's interesting. You know, I have a similar background where my grandfather was a math whiz and got scholarships for free to go to university, but he couldn't afford to go for free. He had to go and earn money. And he went to go work in a factory and ended up going to law school at night because it was cheap, and became a judge for years and years. You know, the choices we make, the sacrifices we make are always, you know, really compelling. Especially when it's for a family, which I think is, the ultimate sacrifice you make for your children, your brothers, you know, is quite remarkable.
Yeah.
Now, with that background, you know, obviously, I don't know if you were destined to be a footballer when you were younger, but so when you were growing up, was there anything you kind of, were you able to dream about what you would want to be when you grew up?
I think the only thing, literally, I wasn't very driven in terms of having a specific dream. I was very curious and very interested in a lot of different things. But I think I remember that I would have loved to be a pilot. The feeling of flying up there, it should have been probably an amazing thing if I would have been able to pursue that career, but I didn't. And I had to satisfy my flying hunger either with flight simulators on computers or lucid dreaming, which is actually one way for humans to fly.
I'm going to get to that in 1 minute. So obviously you're a marketer, but you're also in the tech space. And I'm curious about how did you end up being someone in the creative space, and then how did you get it from there to the technology space?
I guess I'm a bit of a mixed bag because since the beginning of my life, I was always in both territories. I had a very analytical mind and very interested in science and technology, but at the same time, a very vivid conversation with my subconscious. So super creative, super imaginative. And the two things went hand in hand. So kind of developed at the same time. I remember my debut in technology was during, I think it was the first high school year where I learned how to program what back then was a fantastic machine, Texas Instruments TI-57. That was a calculator that had
Cutting
this
edge.
incredible, that back then it was, we were all flabbergasted by the possibility of programming a calculator. And then after that, I went into the ZX80 Sinclair, and I did my rounds of programming, and it was ridiculously ineffective. But for me back then, just writing a few lines of code and seeing messages on the screen was, wow, this is the next thing. And I never lost the flair for anticipating trends. And I think my life, my relationship with technology really changed when I met the first Macintosh computer by Steve Jobs. And back then, Apple wasn't popular. Steve Jobs wasn't as famous as we remember it today. And I got fascinated by the thinking behind the Mac, and actually very fascinated by Steve Jobs himself. And I started to learn as much as I could about his way of thinking. And as of today, still sort of a mentor I never met, but I really, really value his way of thinking.
And so I'm curious, Alex, why you didn't pursue a computer science kind of career, a coder, as opposed to going, how did you end up on the creative side?
That is also an interesting story. So, to be honest with you, at the time, I wasn't even interested in neither kind of careers. I was enjoying being a rebel kind of person, a rocker. I had my rock band, chasing girls, chasing rock music, living the life. And then one day I met with an art director from a creative agency. And we started to become friends. And one day he told me, "You are absolutely perfect for advertising. You should have a career in advertising because you love music, literature, movies, writing, books, all of that makes you perfect for that." And I said, "Yeah, but I hate advertising. It's shitty. It's horrible. It's really bad." And he said, "Then why don't you come and change it?"
There you
And that stuck with me. I was, yeah, maybe this guy has a point. So I started with an internship in an international agency, and from them on, my career skyrocketed, and I have never looked back because it was really, really intense and fast and thrilling. So yeah, I guess my scientific side was later to resurface in my work, but and in my personal interests, but not as a career.
Well, let's talk about, you worked at some big agencies. Did you have or do you have a favorite campaign you worked on or a favorite brand that you worked with that you thought, you're super proud of the work and really interesting and creative?
I think I have a couple of campaigns that I was really fond of when I was in the creative agencies. One happened when I was ECD for McCann in Italy. We happened to do a campaign for a cold cuts brand called Fiorucci, and that campaign won like three Lions at Cannes because it was really fun and interesting for the time because it worked on corruption in Italy. So the old campaign was based around the fact that Italy is highly corrupted country, which is, and cold cuts were the money in that story. So just exchanging real money for cold cuts and telling the story of corruption in Italy. And I remember one of the lions I won was for a study we did with an amazing, amazing data visualizer called Giorgia Lupi. She's active in New York. She's one of the world's brightest data visualizers. And we created the first ever map of corruption, historical map of corruption in Italy, shaped as a big mortadella slice with all the clusters and all the fat white dots being of course data driven. So it was exciting because back then that piece of information didn't exist simply. So we just gave it to the journalists to do a better job at highlighting that corruption. So that would be one. I had fun. The film we did was quite interesting and fun. And then the other one, I did it in Dubai. As soon as I joined Dubai in 2015 for Publicis, I was a regional SCD for Publicis, and it was for Chrysler. And the campaign was called The Performer, and it was really crazy because we took a Chrysler 300 and we sampled it inside out, every single sound coming from the car. Then we created a music instrument out of that car, and we did a whole documentary series of the process of sampling this car. And then we gave this instrument, a software instrument, in the hands of Qusi, who is a Saudi rapper that was tasked to compose a song that will later become the soundtrack of the commercial for Chrysler. And there were a couple of crazy
So
executions. I remember that.
your music love came into play as well in that process.
Look, when you are in advertising, all my interests come into play because I love music, I love movies, I like literature, I like technology. So all my hobbies and all my passions learn from advertising, and advertising learns from my passions. It's a very healthy, virtuous circle that at play there.
So let me ask you about how, first of all, if you could just explain what lucid dreaming is, because I don't think everyone understands what that is, and then talk about how meditation and lucid dreaming have impacted your professional life.
That's a very, very interesting question, which I could take you here 24 hours to speak about this stuff. So, in a nutshell, well, first of all, Kundalini Yoga and meditation was one of those things that changed my life. And my meditation teacher is another mentor, which this time I had the luck to work with one of the most prominent teachers in the world. He came to Rome from New Mexico, and I had the luck of being one of his first students. So he really taught me a lot, and I've been meditating ever since for 35 years now. So lucid dreaming came a bit later. What is lucid dreaming? Is the ability to wake up within the dream. In other terms, you realize you're dreaming, and while you're still dreaming, but your mind goes back online, and you realize you are dreaming. And what is interesting about lucid dreaming is that from that moment on, for as long as you can keep your system stable, because it's very easy to lose that awareness, you can direct your dreams. So it's like a director of a movie. If you decide you want to fly, you're going to fly. And it's not just something, a figment of your imagination. It's physically flying. So you feel the wind, you feel everything exactly as in real life. Because what we consider hazy about dreams is the fact that we remember them. But when you wake up within a dream, it's as real as physical life without being physical life. So I think it's the most exhilarating experience a human can have, honestly, because once you experiment a lucid dream, that changes your perception of what life is, because it's an incredibly powerful experience. And then, of course, like everything in the domain of spiritual research, which is a fancy way to say that we try to investigate what our bodies and mind can do that has not been explained yet. It will be explained. It's a science. It's not. I'm deeply convinced there are scientific bases. So it's not a mumbo jumbo thing, but it's just science hasn't figured out everything yet, even though lately some of these more esoteric practices have been researched and studied. And so, for example, there is one meditation that we do in Kundalini Yoga called Kirtan Kriya. It's a very, very important meditation in our practice. And science discovered is one of the few things that can slow down Alzheimer. And scientists don't know why or how, but there are so many studies now, double blinded, etc. So we know it works. Science know it works. They haven't figured out yet why. So you know that's fun and interesting thing to do, to be at the forefront of this exploration of what your mind body system can achieve in terms of states of consciousness.
That is fascinating. I'm curious if then you're able, because you're now directing, a dream, does how is that different, or how does that impact when you're developing a creative idea?
Oh, that's a
Does it expand your ability to be more creative and
great question. So first of all, my dreams have always been a huge source of inspiration in my life, for everything, not only the creative works, for my art, for my approach to life. And if you dissect it, what dreaming is really your subconscious at play. And I think what for me is a very typical thing about me is I develop this very, very open relationship with my subconscious, thanks to meditation and thanks to the creative practice. And this is how you are very creative, because the creative work is not done rationally, it's done in the subconscious. So it's like a system where you have an input, a processor, and an output. So the input is your senses, basically everything you do and learn is a sort of input that goes in your brain, in your rational mind. And then all these elements are disassembled and reassembled at the subconscious level with a creativity and a clarity that your thinking mind could never achieve. It's called the lateral thinking. De Bono was describing this as lateral thinking, but and it's the base of creativity is connecting known elements in a new, surprising and useful way. So all these elements that you input through your senses and through your intelligence that get stored in your system, they get, as I said, disassembled and reassembled creatively by your subconscious. And then from your subconscious, it bubbles up to your awakened mind, to your rational mind. So many times in my life, really good ideas I had was never a vertical process of my mind. All of a sudden, that idea popped up in my consciousness. The moment before wasn't there, the moment after was there fully formed. And this happened with songs, with campaigns, with art, works of art, and stuff like that. And it's not that, it's not a coincidence and it's not random. It's your subconscious working on whatever brief you give to your subconscious. Today, we would call it a prompt. So basically, when you work in advertising and you have to be creative 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and you cannot experience delay, you are basically prompting your subconscious with a brief, with the task you have at hand. You ingest all the elements about that brief, and then you let your subconscious do the heavy lifting of the creative idea. And then when it comes back to your mind, your superego, who is a sensor, starts to shape it in a way that is digestible for the business environment.
Well, I'm curious, with this line of thinking, do you believe that everyone is creative and that everyone has the equal capacity to be creative?
Look, everyone has the potential to be creative. Yes. Because creativity is not, I'm also very, very adamant. I don't want to be called a creative because to me that's almost racial profiling, you know? It's insane. You don't call someone a creative. This is when you want to control someone. Creativity is a human function that we all can develop. And like many other things, you need to develop it. Right. So everyone can have ideas. Everyone can be creatives in so many different sides of their lives. Some of us do it for a living, which requires you to really day in, day out, develop these mechanisms, which make you a bit more skilled in that. You can have more ideas. You can have better quality of ideas. But it's absolutely not something that some people have and some people don't have.
Well, let's move that now into the realm of AI, where I think at some point people might have said it, AI isn't creative, and now a lot of people would say it can be quite creative. So, A, can AI be creative? And B, what's going to be the impact if AI can use all the inputs and be trained in such a way? Will that somehow diminish the need for creative expression from designers, etc.?
Geez, this is the million-dollar question, right? Is what the creative industry is discussing these days. So, first of
Well, you're
all,
there.
I
That's why
have,
I'm asking.
yeah. So, first of all, I have a talk I give, which is titled, the first slide is, "Can humans be as creative as machines?" So clearly, I think that yes, AI can be very creative. Now, in which way it's where we need to define it. So I use all the AI tools, both the image one like Midjourney or the video ones like Kling or Runway or Veo, or the language-based ones like Claude, ChatGPT, and whatever. I use them as creative partners. And you need to be really good at prompting because that's where the magic happens. Those tools is not just because you can talk to these tools in English or in your native language. This doesn't make everyone equally able to get out of this tool the same quality of work. So it's another thing that you need to learn how to do it because prompting is not as straightforward as it seems. But once you become proficient at prompting, you can really work with these tools as creative sparring partners, and you can bounce ideas back and forth with these tools. And to me, it's as satisfying as when I was working with other creative people. It's really, really interesting. Now, things will change. So you still need to be the initiator of this conversation. You still need to steer the conversation with AI. You still need to be somehow in control of the output and guide AI, exactly like a creative director guides a less experienced creative, is the same kind of relationship. But these AI tools are growing quickly and they're gaining very quickly, because AI develops exponentially, not linearly. We as humans develop linearly. AI is developing exponentially. So there will come a time when AI will be able, and we have seen the dawn of it with agentic AIs, AI being able to take the initiative. So I can prompt, very soon I will prompt an AI saying, "You are a creative director specialized in contemporary art, and I want you to come up with ideas for this or that, or create an agency." I could create an agency just with AI agents and talk to them. And the result is amazing.
And as someone who is a creative artist, so beyond just your creative director, you're creating art and music. Should artists of various kinds, some of them are fearful that AI will replace them or make it harder to generate original creative expression. What would you say to people who are worried about that possibility?
Well, I have to be entirely honest. They are not wrong. They are somehow right, meaning that what AI can do can replace specialism. So, just to make an example, if you are a digital illustrator or someone that for a living creates illustration, yes, your job is at risk unless you embrace AI and use it to evolve your profession. And I've seen this with digital photography, with 3D. I've seen it through all my life. I remember clearly when digital illustration came about, there were all the traditional illustrators that were fearful and angry. And some of them died because of this, but others that were very good embraced the tool enthusiastically, and they actually work more, kept having a great career, and kept working even more than before. So I would say there are a few things that we need to put in the right perspective here. One is evolution doesn't stop, and fear is not the way to deal with innovation. Right. So fear is not the way to deal with anything. Being fearful stops you in your tracks. Fear never helped anyone to achieve anything. It's a survival thing. It's a primal thing. It's connected to anger, and it doesn't bring anything good to the table. So I would suggest any artist to become immediately experts at using these tools and develop their career in an even more exciting direction. So if you spend 30 years developing a certain style and that's all you do, then yes, you're at risk because I can prompt Midjourney and get a better illustration than 95 of the illustrators could give me after a month and asking me, I don't know, $5,000 for it. And it's sad, but it is what it is. Every innovation comes at a cost. And when we invented print, yes, people that were writing books by hand lost their job quite surely. But then everyone was able to read books, and everyone was able to afford books, and education spread. So there is always a trade-off. So first of all, don't be fearful, embrace innovation. Second, what I think is more interesting, and this I may become a bit philosophical in this, but I think that what AI is literally doing is holding a mirror in front of us. And you have to ask yourself the question, as an artist or as a doctor, as an engineer, as an architect, as you can insert any profession there, right? So as an artist, who am I in a world where AI exists? So in other terms, you need to redefine yourself as an artist, which doesn't make you lesser artist or doesn't kill your social function of an artist. You just have to rethink yourself and start asking yourself the right question, which is, who am I if a machine ABC, what does make of me? And how can I still being an artist and still being a guide for other artists and have a social function without having to, just quit because the machine can do very well a few things. Still, we are not in the stage where these machines can take our visionary thing. Maybe it will come, and I'm one of those that thinks it will come because the moment you reach AGI, and this is the debate of the century. Will we ever get there? Will we get there in 20 years? Will we get there in 10 years? This I
Are we
don't know.
there?
Are we
Depending on
maybe
your,
starting to be there?
yeah, based
That
on
I
your
don't know.
definition.
Yeah, that I don't know. But for sure, when we will reach that point, we will face very, very deep societal changes. And I think my personal point of view is if I cannot stop something, I prefer to understand it and think ahead. So when that moment will come, I will have already examined all the possible solutions, and I would probably have changed myself in ways that AI cannot impact.
Yeah, I agree with almost all of what you said in terms of, and whether it's, an artist or another profession, which is you need to embrace AI and see how that very powerful evolving tool can help you evolve in whatever it is you're doing. And that's the idea, is that it is this incredible partner to help you accomplish the things you want to accomplish. And if you don't embrace it, you certainly will be at a disadvantage, is the way that I believe it should be understood. And the other thing is, the studies that I've seen are that the ones that have the concerns and fear are usually the ones who haven't used much of it. And the
Yeah,
ones that are much
that's
more
it.
comfortable, when you start using it, you're like, oh, this is amazing. I can do even more advanced things and take my vision and see it come in a way that I would have been able to do beforehand. And I think that's really what's remarkable. Alex, you moved from Rome and then went to Dubai and Abu Dhabi. I'm curious about what you see as kind of any of the cultural differences in terms of how people are thinking about AI, sort of your expect your perspective on what US thinks, Europe, and now the Middle East, because obviously there have been a lot of developments in terms of collaborations, and there's been some tensions in terms of who you work with. But in generally, when you think about what people think about AI, are there differences between the regions?
Yeah, for sure there are. So look, I think, let me put it like this. I think if I have to think about the three countries I've spent, the two countries I spent most of my time in, which is Italy, therefore Europe, and Dubai, therefore UAE, even though I studied a bit in New York and work a bit in London and Amsterdam. So I have my opinion on all these societies. Europe, to me, is the one that is the most at risk because they decided to go for a very, very, very contrived approach to AI, trying to regulate everything, and in my opinion, over-regulating, which will make them a follower region when it comes to the possibilities of AI. So Europe has been sleeping on this and on many other things as well, but particularly on this. Now, when it comes to the States, there is absolutely no doubt that the States is at the forefront of the AI development and research. It's also very true that the States is not equally distributed potential or technologies. So I would say that in the States, you can go from a very, very disadvantaged situation where people don't have access to AI or don't have the culture or the push from anyone to start using it. And then you have the obvious ones, the Silicon Valley, the Texas of this world, New York, Los Angeles, all the big centers of development and investments that have already embraced it and being those technology, most of them native from USA. Of course, there is a big imbalance between these two Americas. So I would say
Definitely.
it's at this gap. And as regards UAE, it's kind of a happy AI island because I cannot stress enough how enlightened the leadership of UAE is. In UAE, we had the first ever global case study. We did a minister of AI. We appointed a minister of AI in 2018. And
Wow.
it has been for a very long time the first and only minister of AI in the world. So the vision that the UAE leadership has is very, very mature, very forward-looking, and very based on innovation. So we are projected as a country, UAE is projected into the future, is not living on the past because there is not a long history in UAE. It's a country that is very young in terms of. If you think about Dubai, vast majority of what you see in Dubai has been built in the last 16 years. And they calculated that Dubai in 10 years did the same job that New York did in 100 years in order to reach a certain level. So it's a young, very smart country. And it's a country that I would define AI native almost because of how much yesterday there was actually a piece in the news that says that the government wants to give ChatGPT Plus, which is $20 a month, to literally every resident in the EU. This is how, and they are doing constantly prompting challenges and contests with rich prizes and an initiative called 1 million coders and 1 million prompters this year. So it's not just at the government level, it's really part of the culture of UAE. And now we are teaching younger generation to make the most of AI. So AI in UAE, that's why I think it's a special place for AI, because it's really the vision about AI is very clear and how to get there and what to do. And you have seen probably the announcement of the 5G campus and Stargate project that we are doing with our friends in the States, which is doesn't come coincidentally, or it's not by chance. It comes because this country is projected into the future, and is so I would say, yeah, I would say that UAE is as progressive as the most progressive America, and America can be as regressive as the most regressive of Europe. So it's the three things are really interesting to analyze from the AI adoption point of view.
Well, you're talking about the future. I want to go back to the past for a moment. You said an environment now that's very AI forward and innovation. If you could go back in time and meet your 21-year-old self, what piece of advice would you give them?
That's a question that pops up. You know, I don't believe in going back and give a piece of advice to my old self, because I think we are, it's almost like time travel paradox. I am who I am because of all the things I've done, including those I've done when I was 21. All the good ones, all the bad ones shaped me for who I am today. So I would simply doing, you're doing good, buddy. Keep doing what you do. Keep asking why to everyone. Keep being a contrarian. Keep being curious. You're doing good. You will be good. Keep doing like that.
I think that's great advice always. So yes. So Alex, you've worked for Google, you work for these major advertising agencies, you're now working for one of the premier AI companies. By a lot of measures, people would say you are a success. But how does Alex define success?
I don't really like the word success, I have to be honest with you, because for me, success comes always at the expenses of someone else. If you consider success to be what society defines as success,
Well, I'm asking for you to define success for Alex.
my and again, I struggle because I don't want to be successful. I just want to be moderately happy. So for me, being successful is, do I do a job that I really like and I'm passionate about? Do I love someone with all my heart? Do I have hobbies and interests? And do I have enough to live a decent life without wanting more than what any normal person should desire for? So I'm a very My definition of success is very boring. It's just being able to wake up in the morning happy and go back to bed at night thinking, I've done a good job today. I'm happy about what I thought, what I did. It's okay.
Well, it reminds me of so there's a story about John Lennon you may have heard when he was, I think, 5 or 6 years old. He was in school, and the teacher asked, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And he looked at her and he said, "Happy." Which I think is the perfect response. You know, it's not about what it's how do you create have you know how do you create whatever meaning, what is meaningful for you and fulfilling for you, and that makes you feel content, you know, is one
And
way of
you
looking at it.
know, just to go back to your previous question, I think this has a lot to do with how we will be reacting to AI. It's we need to become more human. We need to be more human, more deeply human. We need to rediscover empathy, collective societies where we exchange feelings, information, and practices. We need to become more human. That's something that I very deeply feel about.
I share that feeling, and I think that's one of the promises of AI is that it enables us the space because we can have the machines do a lot of the things that maybe we don't want to do, so that we can do the things that are more human in terms of interactions and connecting with people and doing those things that really matter.
Yeah. So look, our group CEO, who is a very, very, very interesting person. We were celebrating the start of Ramadan all together at a dinner. And he said to us, you know, some friends ask me, I have a kid now that has the age to go to university. What would be your advice for this kid? And he said something really impressive, which is don't go to university. Because literally 4 years or 6 years from now, your degree will be obsolete. So the best thing you can do now in this particular moment in space and time is take your time to understand the world, travel it, visit different cultures, open up your mind as much as you can. And probably that should be your university now. And when you will be back, the world will be a different thing. And then you can make an informed decision. But the experiences that you had will make you the best candidate to be at the forefront of what's coming.
Yeah, I love that. And it's funny because I have daughters at the moment that are in university. So I'm, and I it's about don't let, this is what some I've heard is don't let school interfere with your education. You know that, because most of the growth that you have is not because you took X class. It's because of something with some person or someplace you traveled or things like that. All right. Well, I want to shift to what I have as quote unquote rapid fire questions, although they don't always go as quickly as I think. But if a movie was made about your life, who would you want to play you?
Ah, that's a fun question. I would choose Christopher Waltz.
He's amazing.
He's a fantastic actor.
He certainly is. Can you name one of your favorite movies? I know you're a big movie
Oh, there
guy.
are too many. If I have to find one, probably would be Blade Runner.
Nice. I love that. I always joke that I have 100 movies in my top 10.
That's a perfect definition. I concur. I concur.
Can you name a book that left a lasting impression on you?
Yes, absolutely. So there is one book that is, and again, I've read so many books, but one was really interesting. It's called Gödel Escher Bach, An Eternal Golden Braid. And this is a 1979 book. And it was written by an American cognitive scientist called Douglas Hofstadter. It's amazing because, you know, your podcast is called Connect the Dots. And this book is about connecting the dots. It creates a beautiful, intricate braid. That's why Braid is an eternal golden braid, is the subtitle of the book. Connecting the work of Gödel, mathematician, Escher, painter, Bach, the musician, and showing you how literally mathematical skills, painting skills, and visualization and music have so much in common. And these three artists and scientists were so close to each other, even though they were operating in completely different fields. And it really did resonate with me because that's my curiosity at play. I always try to connect all the dots I could connect. I want to understand why. I'm an anchor. Until I understand something, I don't stop asking questions. I don't stop interrogating myself. So this ability to connect the dots, that book was all about that. And it was a beautiful book. I would recommend it to everyone.
I'm definitely going to check it out. Anything, you know, with connecting dots is something I'm interested in learning more. This may be a hard one for you. I know you use a lot of different AI tools. Do you have either a favorite one or one you use the most?
Absolutely, yes. Midjourney would be the answer.
Nice.
I think it's really, first of all, I got into Midjourney when it was still in closed beta, and I went into a rabbit hole. I think I generated 150,000 images in order to learn how to prompt through the different version. When I started, it was V3. Now we are at V7. And I think Midjourney is the dream of an artist because you can control it in so many ways, and the output is so good because they made the right decision. They trained the model on art and photography, good photography, while, for example, Sora was trained on the shittiest stock images. And as of today, it still shows. So if you work with these tools, we don't need more garbage, human or artificial. We don't need
Or
more garbage.
otherwise. Do you have a favorite emoji?
Yeah, shrug. Because I don't know. I don't know. I still don't know. And I have so many questions in my mind, and I try to find so many answers that the shrug emoji definitely is my favorite one.
Alex, do you have a favorite non-digital activity?
I have many. That's my curse because I have too many interests, and it's a curse and a blessing at the same time. But I would say, yeah, but would be meditation. That's my favorite non-digital, even though someone may argue that it's indeed sort of a digital activity because you're
Well, I think
working
of the
on your own
electricity, right?
neural networks. It's you're working through electricity in your brain, you're working to stabilize certain brain waves or change brain waves. So it's somehow, but yeah, meditation would be it.
And th this may be the same answer, but what's the one thing you can't live without?
Music, that's an easy one.
Ah, I love
That's an
that.
easy one. Music is, yeah, the food of love, to quote the bard,
Love that.
is really amazing. Is I cannot even start to describe it. To me, it's a prime evil language. There are only a few primeval languages, and music and math are those kind of languages that are universally true across cultures, across time, and will always be evolving and true. While some languages may be lost in the sands of time, music will never, and the same goes with math. So I think, yeah, I couldn't live without music. A world without music is black and
Not
white,
worth
boring world.
living. Finally, if you could be credited with inventing something, either that already exists or doesn't, what would it be and why?
I had this vision long before AI came into play, and I was one day I was discussing this with a creative technologies friend of mine, and I was telling him, you know, one day I want to be able to create a movie just by talking to a tool. And this is what it's all I want to do is to, and we are almost there because natural
Almost,
language and almost there. So it's happening. I'm just thinking it in a slightly more advanced way than what today is possible, but I'm confident in 2 to 3 years we will see movies that are entirely generated just with language.
yeah, I love that. Alex, this has been great. I really appreciate your time and your perspective, which is fascinating. I want to give you an opportunity. Is there anything in particular that you want to promote at the moment or want to share that you're excited about?
I hate promoting. I hate promoting as much as I hate the word success. They're in the same category for me. And no, I don't need to promote anything. I'm really the only message I want to give in terms of a promotion is, live to the fullest and embrace curiosity and experiment as much as you can.
That's beautiful.
With your thinking models. That would be my promotion. That's what I'm trying to sell.
I love it. I'd like to buy some. And what if people want to connect with you further? What's the best platform or social? Are you on social media? What's the best way to
So,
follow?
yeah, I would say LinkedIn would be the one, honestly, is the simplest and most accessible one because on Facebook I do the typical old man thing, which is ranting and being very, very upset about all the things that go wrong in the world. So I don't want to show that face of me to people. And Instagram, I'm not ready for that. I will want to open an Instagram profile only when I will decide to showcase my work a bit more in depth. So for now, LinkedIn is a very good
All right. Although I look
combination
forward
of.
to your Instagram feed at some point, I think it'll be quite intriguing. Alex, again, I want to thank you for your time and your contribution, and I want to thank you for helping us connect the dots.
Oh, amazing. Thanks a lot, Jeffrey.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this podcast sponsored by AIQ. Subscribe at AIQNewsletter.com. Music produced by Sam Miller. Please subscribe on your preferred podcast platform so you don't miss any future episodes. If you could do me a favor and please leave a review on iTunes, I would really appreciate it. Remember, story matters and is the best way to connect the dots.